I'm Frank Vaughn. It's October 1st, 2025. And first up, someone sent me an encrypted email. I spent 2 days trying to figure out how to reply to it and failed, so I just updated the website with the requested information. If you see this, that's for you. The second thing is I was starting out yesterday contemplating the things that I don't understand and trying to do things to figure out those things that I don't understand. And in the midst of my reverie, in the midst of the mystery, my hot water tank, the entire bottom blew out. And so I had water leaking all over the place. And it's kind of funny because I've been thinking for a long while about doing cold showers. And I'm sorry if I'm swiping at things, it's because there's flies in the house because I had to have the door wide open while I drained off that tank. I've been thinking about doing cold showers for a long time, and I've finally been forced to. Man, is that ever invigorating. And do you know what else is invigorating? Reading this morning about a government shutdown in the United States. Congratulations, America. You did it. You're going to be saving billions of dollars a day, and something else is going to happen. Civilization will not collapse. Life will continue moving forward as normal. 750,000 federal workers are furloughed without pay. Oh, think of it. Can you imagine if we read a headline like that in Canada? The dream would come true. The problem is, you could say that one of the only good things to come out of Carney is this commitment to cut the public service by at least 15%, supposedly to bring the deficit under control. The only problem is, as he cuts those jobs, he's going to take the proceeds, and they're going to be, funneled into the deficit, which is running at $69 billion. It'll come in higher. Guaranteed, we don't even have a budget. They're just running through the Governor General's office, as we've talked about on this channel. That money, if there's any of it left anyway, after the deficit, will just go to Ukraine. It will just go to Palestine. It will just go overseas to fund gender clinics in Nigeria. It will just go to nonsense that no one's ever voted for, which is why even if a government shutdown were possible in Canada, which I don't think it is because the Governor General will just keep it open anyway, it would be a snooze fest because it's not going to save anybody. This on screen is something that people should be paying attention to. If Canada says no, we're going in a different direction. U.S. Ambassador Hoekstra and Premier Smith's interview on NORAD, CUSMA, and more. Let's go over this point by point real quick. Alberta prioritizes business relationships over political tensions with the United States. Premier Smith explained how the Wild Rose province is focusing on job creation and economic prosperity in its relationship with U.S. counterparts. The problem is Ottawa is always going to get in the way, just like they have for the past century and a half in terms of Western prosperity. We are a cash cow to send cash back east so that we can satisfy voters in Quebec. Same as the gun confiscation, which we're going to get into next. But when is Premier Mo going to realize that the problem's Ottawa, not the United States? As much as they're doing good diplomacy here with the United States, Ottawa is the barrier. And if we don't resist Ottawa, we're never going to prosper. CUSMA negotiations will likely extend well beyond 2026. Why? Because Ottawa is playing politics. Now, it says due to the complexity of negotiations and U.S. electoral timing, the negotiations, which Ottawa has done everything in its power, and Doug Ford has done everything in his power, and honestly, Pierre Poilievre hasn't helped much. His language is starting to change now, which I'm very grateful for. His language on the United States is starting to change. His language on immigration has changed massively. He's getting tougher. It's good to see. He's got to go further. I would say that his base needs to keep up pressure. This is not the time to be getting under the big tent and shutting your mouth. This is the time to object and get your opinions out there. But Ottawa is going to play politics, so renegotiations could potentially last until 2027. And until that time, for those of you who don't know, it's 2025, starting the fourth quarter today. If we don't get a deal all the way through 2026, there's a whole pile of businesses that will be left in limbo. And what little, because there ain't much, foreign investment or Canadian investment in the Canadian economy that wants to go into the energy sector, the resource sector, or many other knock-on sectors will be holding their money back because there's uncertainty. Ottawa should be making a priority out of making a deal with our largest trading partner, and instead all we seem to want to do is inflame them with the latest thing, rewarding terrorists, rewarding people who are never going to be satisfied with official recognition of the Palestinian state, even if it's run by Hamas. This is doing nothing but aggravating our American counterparts. Energy cooperation remains the cornerstone of Alberta-U.S. relations. The premier and U.S. ambassador discussed significant room for expansion in the trade relationship for both traditional and high-tech sectors. Wonderful. Again, Ottawa. Defense partnerships through NORAD face potential challenges. Some Canadian politicians and high-profile voices question the security relationship with the United States, which could cause issues for the relationship between the two countries in defending the Arctic. That's a nice way of saying that Canada has shown no gratitude whatsoever for living under the U.S. military umbrella for decades now. We have taken apart our military. We have taken apart our fighting capacity. We have very little in terms of readiness. We have no depth in terms of supply of munitions for the basics that we have. We rely on them to respond to threats in Canadian cities because our jets, what we have, are too far away. And we're very ungrateful and we're very loud about it. So this is very diplomatic language, but the fact is the United States identifies security threats, identifies the future as being conflict over the Arctic, and Canada has no capacity whatsoever to actually defend the northern coastline. And again, we depend on the United States to do it, and all we do is mouth them. Provincial approaches to U.S. relations vary significantly. Premier Smith explained how Alberta is taking a more friendly stance than other provinces on trade issues. Yeah, Fat Trudeau, Doug Ford in Ontario, the Bloc Québécois, anything of the east of the Manitoba border has decided that militancy at the expense of the western provinces is the best approach. This is why we need to get away from the east. There's two road links. Actually, there's only one, and one rail link that hold this country east to west together. Our money, our trade, the butter that goes on our bread comes from trade with the United States and Western Canada, and we need to start appreciating that, and we need to start prioritizing that. Ottawa doesn't do us any favors, but the United States, they do. Further to Ottawa not doing us any favors, the gun, so-called gun buyback, which isn't a buyback, it's an outright seizure. They have budgeted $730-odd million total for this program, to administer it and to do buybacks and to reimburse people for rendering the firearms that have been banned, which are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of firearms. And this total budget is supposed to cover all of them. There are 90,000 AR-15s in Canada. The government knows where all of them are. The buyback will barely cover those guns alone. In effect, the people who have our pals who have registered firearms, because if you have a restricted personal acquisition license, that means the government already knows that you have all of those firearms anyway. That's all your pistols. That's all your banned rifles that have now become prohibited. They know that you have them, and they have not budgeted enough money to even pay you back at their reduced rate. Because let's face it, I was going through the list last night, and some of the prices that they have put on these firearms are ridiculous. Some are a little low, some are very low. You're not getting fairly compensated whatsoever. But it's very likely that you're not going to get compensated at all because they haven't even budgeted enough to get back a fraction of the restricteds. And what you're going to do is you're going to have to go and you're going to have to fill out a form where they're going to pre-fill out all of your restricted firearms so that, because they already know. And then you're going to have to voluntarily disclose all the non-restricted firearms that they have banned. And they're going to want to know all about that. And you're going to be put in a queue that it shouldn't even exist, for the limited money that you're never going to see. You're never going to get compensated for your banned non-restricteds. It is an outright gun seizure. This is the same government whose loose bail conditions have seen violent criminals released onto our streets every single day. You get people who have been charged 60, 70, 80 times. They go to the healing lodge. They get let out to reoffend. You've got people who do horrible things to children to try and satisfy the YouTube algorithm, and they're let back out in public, and their identities are protected. This government is the most soft-on-crime government you can imagine, but they are going to go hard on the most vetted Canadians. Gun owners are the finest Canadians. They don't have criminal records. They don't have histories of violence. They're vetted every single day. And that's who they're going after. And I made a tweet talking about how these seized guns, the idea was floated that the government was going to take this property of yours. And this is, again, evidence that you don't have private property. The CCFR, and the reason it's on screen is because there's a lot of people who are critical of the CCFR right now. They want the CCFR to demand that their members don't comply. But the CCFR's approach has been diplomatic and legal. They've spent millions of dollars fighting for gun rights. It's called the Canadian Coalition for Gun Rights because you don't have them. You don't even have basic property rights. And the work that the CCFR has done through the courts, next up is a Supreme Court challenge, is not just about firearms. It's whether or not you have any right to personal property at all, or the government can just seize whatever they want, from plastic straws to firearms to the house that you live in. Their approach is a strategy. Now, there's other strategies out there. There's non-compliance. There's getting really loud. There's organizations that, you know, from my cold, dead hands, and you can do that. None of them have spent the resources the CCFR has to legally try and protect you. And that's kind of noble. They're not the organization that's going to get loud the way that you want. Non-compliance is a decision for every gun owner. I'll tell you this, that if there was to be mass non-compliance, the government would be in a tricky spot because they don't have the resources to arrest and jail and prosecute every single person that would be non-compliant. They don't even have the resources to arrest the people who are committing the violent crimes. They can't even hold them in jails because they don't have the facilities and they don't have the will. So this is a situation that's going to work. But I want to hear from Rod Giltaka for a second. Let's just let him talk.
Or probably, but they're saying, hey, gun owners, run into that portal as soon as it's open, as fast as you can, because you're competing with everybody else for compensation. So tell us what you have as soon as you possibly can. Send that information. But it's first come, first served. So if you're too far down the queue, you have told us everything that you have and you aren't getting paid for any of it. You're going to turn it in for free, or you're going to have it, or you're going to pay $500, $400 to $700 to have all of those firearms deactivated out of your pocket, and you'll have to keep them that way. Or, of course, the alternative to that is be a criminal. I told public safety, like, it's not them that are doing it. They're told to do something and they're doing that, right? It's the politicians. But I said, that scheme is diabolical, is what I said to them right there. And it is. It's like just, it's evil. But anyway.
It's diabolical. It is evil. And I don't think it's going to work. Now, people who want the CCFR to call for mass noncompliance, they're not going to advise you to commit a crime, because there was a little note in there that you face a choice. You either comply with the law or you become a criminal. And being a criminal carries a lot of personal penalties for you. It carries a lot of liability. It's a pretty serious decision. There's enough people in this country calling for it. You don't need the organization that's going to the Supreme Court to try and stop this sort of stuff calling for it either. You know the decision that you face. You don't need anybody to tell you about the choice that you have to make. But the sickness is, back to the point, is that they floated the idea of taking your property and not fairly compensating for it at all. You have to just turn it in. And the Liberal government actually floated the idea of sending your stolen property to Ukraine. So these firearms, which have never committed a crime, these firearms, which have never killed a human being, these firearms, most of them, the restricted guns, you can't use them for hunting. You have to use non-restricted guns. Restricted firearms in this country, owned by the most vetted Canadians, have to stay in your safe or go to the range or go to the gun shop, and you have to have a permit to take them there. They're already the most protected class of firearm. They've never done anything to anybody in the history of the program. But they were going to take them and send them to a war that's already seen the death of over 1 million men, the flower of Ukrainian youth and some of the flower of Russian youth, to literally kill people. Steal your property, send it overseas so it can kill people. That is evil. That is diabolical. The only thing that stopped it was the Ukrainians said, no, they're not desperate enough. They want the good stuff. They don't want your AR-15s. They want real weapons. They're fussy. These are fussy welfare recipients. You know, and this brings up a philosophical point. Welfare breeds contempt. And gratitude is a burden. Gratitude is not a gift. It's a burden. Quickly dispensed with by those who are used to taking. Zelensky is used to taking. The Ukrainian regime, and that's what it is, they don't hold elections anymore. They've shut down the press. They've repressed the church. They've repressed their own people. No one supports the war in Ukraine anymore. Everybody's sick of watching their families get killed and dying. They want out. The people want out. The governments want to keep it going. And it's disgusting. But welfare breeds contempt. They don't love us for all the money we send. They just want the money. They will never show appreciation beyond just saying a standard thank you. And when it comes to such dedication from the Canadian government, that they are willing to steal millions of their citizens' property and send it overseas, the Ukrainians said, nah, you know what? That's not good enough for us. Ha! And now we got to go back to this about Tylenol, because we've had people virtue signaling by taking all kinds of Tylenol and hurting themselves and hurting their babies because they're not thinking, they're just reacting to Trump, that this Tylenol story is old news. Remember I said when we started having kids in 2019, we knew to stay away from not just Tylenol, but other things. You know, my wife never took a painkiller the entire time that she was pregnant with both babies and delivered naturally. A lot of the reasons for that were because information was publicly available at that time about the risks. It's not to say that some people don't have to take things, but if you can avoid it, you probably should. Tylenol maker said in internal emails, evidence of link to autism starting to feel heavy. The emails came to light in litigation against Johnson & Johnson. Now, Johnson & Johnson used to be the maker of Tylenol, but they spun out a company called Kenvue, which took it over in 2023, which in a way, and I'm just speculating here, I don't know, but it seems like they were trying to distance themselves from the fallout that was going to come in subsequent years as the Trump administration came along, as evidence came out. Remember thalidomide, folks, it was perfectly safe until it wasn't. The manufacturer of Tylenol was keeping tabs on research into the drug and neurodevelopmental issues such as autism, and concluded in 2018 that evidence of a link between them was becoming significant, according to newly disclosed documents. Now, you should just go and read this. And the way that you find these articles that are on screen, it's actually pretty simple. You just have to type in probably the first five words or six words in any headline that I show, and you will find it. The website is right up here for you to read. So if you want to read this yourself, you should. It's freely available. It's not behind a paywall. And you should read all of the details, because it goes into some detail, and down near the bottom somewhere, it also talks about how, maybe not a cover-up, but follow-up research. You see, this is the interesting thing about scientism. People like to poo-poo religion all the time. They like to poo-poo faith. The thing about scientism is how you frame the so-called science determines what the science says. So if you're not asking the right questions, if you're not looking under the right stones, if you're not conducting the right research, you can predetermine an outcome. It's just like statistics can be manipulated to generate the result that you want. The way you frame the science that you do can frame the result that you want. And that appears to be what is going on when it comes to this drug, as well as other drugs. The biggest issue that was had, one of the biggest issues that was highlighted in this article from Johnson & Johnson, was not that acetaminophen was found, or there was a body of evidence suggesting it was harmful. They were upset that there wasn't studies done on other drugs alongside it. They felt they were treated unfairly. Meanwhile, it's still available on store shelves. You can still go and take it. You can take it while you're pregnant. People do. They make TikTok videos, proud of themselves for taking this stuff, thinking they're engaged in some kind of profound act of rebellion against Donald Trump, when really they're just putting their stupidity on public display. Tylenol themselves. Well, I can say that they themselves say they pass the buck. They say don't take anything while you're pregnant without consulting your healthcare practitioner. So they're trying to put it on the doctor's recommendation. They're absolving themselves. But even in their previous postings, as I've shown on this channel, they advise against pregnant people taking it. And yet people think this is some kind of Trumpian conspiracy. It's actually just an element of truth coming out that we should celebrate coming out, because shouldn't we want to protect unborn babies? I forget. The left is obsessed with killing them through abortion. But I guess it's left to the Epoch Times to actually tell us this true news story, because even the Daily Mail, RFK Jr., nicotine pouch. RFK Jr. caught secretly popping Gen Z's favorite weight loss drug behind Trump's back. And then it goes into the article. They don't actually know if he popped a nicotine patch. Could have been gum. Could have been a nicotine patch. Could have been a breath mint. Who knows what RFK did here? But this is clearly not the most serious concern that the Daily Mail could be obsessed with on this day. And now, my friends, I have to go and finish cleaning up this mess that my hot water tank made for me. The privileges of home ownership is there's no one to call. You just have to fix everything yourself. I'm Frank Vaughn. If you like the work, please consider supporting it via the website. I'll see you in the next one.